Well, here we are. It's the news, according to me. Good Friday morning, March 22nd, 10:15 a.m. It's late, 2024. And it is snowing outside. It's like snow pellets. It's not really snow. It's like frozen little balls of rain. It's moisture, frozen moisture we have. I wouldn't call this snow. It's kind of like almost snow, but it's not quite. It's like little balls of, like little snowballs. That's what it is. Which, you know, is in quite contrast to the summertime weather we were having a week or two ago. I think people are kind of thinking that, well, you know, winter was over. I'm going to an outside event tonight and tomorrow night where we're doing some worship leading stuff in a band. And I don't think anybody's going to show up. It's supposed to be raining. And it's supposed to be in the 40s, low 40s, at least low 40s probably tomorrow or tonight. Tomorrow, at least the sun's supposed to be shining, so it's it may not be quite as bad. The reason I say that is because this thing is outside, and there's no cover for anybody. I am taking a little pop-up cover thing. I don't know if anybody else is bringing one or not, but I've got one. I'm taking it. And I might take some some tarps and things to actually keep the wind off of us, because that's where it kills you. I'm playing guitar and who knows what else. And I'm kind of mostly in charge of the sound stuff tonight, because we're kind of trying out this new system thing. I'm going to have a nice hot cup of hot chocolate probably with me too. I've got some chai this morning. I've got chai with Cinnabon creamer. Well, I am in the worldwide headquarters. I made my chai at home and brought it here. And I'm running behind. I have to apologize. Fridays are supposed to be the sound clip day of all the stuff that I've talked about all week. And of course, I have not been able to get that done. All these sound clips I wanted to do. But anyway, I digress. I have a lot of things happening today, tomorrow. It's looking like Monday, possibly Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week, there will probably be shows the way things have been going. Pretty rare that they have been using me right now for some reason. They've got enough guys now covering all the things that are happening. And I'm kind of standing by in a limbo mode. And of course, and most of that's because things are winding down for next month, because I've got this training I have to go to. I do this once a year to get this certification stuff. And I'm going to do that, and then I'll be going to on vacation after that, actually. I haven't found out. There may be some time in there where they need me for something in between vacation time, and there's a couple of vacation weeks I have there. I don't think they're going to use me between those weeks. So it's kind of interesting. It's been an interesting couple of months, the next couple of months. Nonetheless, I trudge on. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if any of you can tell the difference in the sound quality here in the worldwide international headquarters. I can tell the difference in my headphones. So I don't know if you guys notice the difference or not, but I can certainly tell the difference. Now, there is some background noise because I do have the door open. And I think the furnace is running right now. But if I shut that door, it gets even quieter in here, which is pretty amazing. So the interesting things that are going on right now, there are so many things happening with I haven't talked much this week about the court cases. Interestingly enough, I had talked about the SEAL Team 6 question. People were bringing this up, and it's come up again for some reason. People are talking about it again because there's this straw man idea that the president could order SEAL Team 6 to kill all of his political enemies and take out his political enemies and then have immunity from that. Now, partially it is. It may be wishful thinking on their part. They're suggesting, hey, you know, Joe, you could just take out Trump and you'd have immunity. Now, these people are freaking out. They realize they're losing. And desperate people do desperate things. I think they're floating the idea out there to find out, to get people's reaction. And my reaction, my initial reaction was, who SEAL Team 6 isn't just a bunch of they're just not dogs. They're not robots. You can't just they just don't strike on. They have minds. They have brains. They have the ability to think. And in fact, SEAL Team people that I've known have been some of the best and brightest and sharpest. They're not just muscle. They're taught to be autonomous and be able to think on their own. And the one thing that they do know is that killing another American citizen, a U.S. citizen, is not a small thing, especially a senator or a congressman or a presidential candidate. And if they would obey that rule, they would be under court-martial. It's called murder. In the military, that's worse than... military tribunal can be worse than a regular court. I just don't think anybody's going to obey that order. And of course, now, I just mentioned that yesterday, and Robert Gouveia apparently had it on his show yesterday. He was talking about it yesterday on the show, and actually because there was a response from some high up military leaders, apparently the people who are in charge of the SEAL team process. Now, I've been out to Coronado. I rubbed elbow when I was much younger. A third the age I am now. And I had a lot of interaction with SEAL Team people there. And it was an interesting time. The one thing I can tell you is, you know, these people are mentally amazing. They're disciplined. They are humble. Most of them, usually very quiet, humble individuals. There are a lot of people out here. It's very strange because in this community, I've met a few people who claim that they were Navy SEALs, and I doubt it. I seriously doubt. A lot of people want to be that, the elite force. You know, they want to be, I was in the elite force. I was a SEAL. They'll say it kind of under their breath. And it's, you get, there's this thing called false valor or stolen valor. It's a syndrome that people have. And I think that there are people around the area that have that kind of thing. They want to be, you know, they may have been, he may have been in the Navy. He may have been part of something. And a lot of people who have tried out to be in the SEALs wanted to be in the SEALs, failed. Some of them, I think you can try more than once if you can go through training more than once. And they wash people out very, you know, it's like, what is it, 5% of the people who start, finish. And it's a process that a lot of people go through, and they wash out, and then they claim after they get out that they were a Navy SEAL because they were in the SEAL program. They got accepted in the SEAL program, but they didn't make it through basically boot camp or training program, initiation, hazing is what it pretty much is. And it's one of those things where people want to say that they were Navy SEAL. They were Navy SEAL. Well, there's a lot of people out there who weren't really Navy SEALs or Rangers or Green Berets. But they'll call themselves that. I was on Delta Force. Delta Force is actually the government denied that it even existed for a long time. And it was kind of a side op or sort of another whole other different, it was just a different animal than what the SEALs were. I wouldn't say it's better or worse, but Delta Force was, it was just different. And it still is. There still is a Delta Force actually out there. They do admit that it exists now. But these guys are if you meet one, they're not going to walk up to you and stick their chest out and get bullyish with you. Now, I've met some people that have been former military. In fact, one of my first impressions, actually, when I was out in San Diego, there's a guy that was a Marine. And I just, he said something about being in the Army, and he was talking to somebody else, and he was asking him a question about being in the Army, and he was being snide, and I didn't realize it. I said, well, when were you? I just instantly asked him, I said, when were you in the Army? He took his elbow, smashed it into my stomach, knocked the wind out of me. We were both kind of sitting down in this, like up against this wall, smashed me in the stomach with his elbow. I didn't give him the benefit of knowing that he had knocked the wind out of me. I sat there stone-faced as I could. And I was only 18 years old at that time. This guy was probably 30 years old. The reason he smashed me in the stomach with his elbow was he wanted to make it clear that he was in the Marines, and he thought everybody should know it. He goes, I wasn't in the Army, I was in the Marines. Oh, well, I didn't know that. But you just made yourself out to be a total jerk in front of everybody. From that moment on, everybody in that group had no respect for the guy. He had a really hard time getting through the rest of that program that we were in. But I digress. No, I just happened to be in the middle of it. He's picking on a kid, basically. I look back on it. I didn't think of myself as a kid back then. I thought of myself as one of them, one of these grown-ups. There was me and a couple other guys that were really young in that group, and I didn't see myself that way. In fact, I was ready to take the guy on. I was ready to throw the guy out of the truck. First chance I got. But anyway, he probably would have cleaned my clock. He's a tough guy. No doubt about that. But at the same time, he was just an idiot. He's just a jerk. I could come up with many, many, many other names for him. I won't do that. Anyway, so those are the kind of people that you look at them and you're like, okay, so you are one of those guys. Now, I've met a lot of Marines in my life as well. 90% of them are the kind of people I want to hang out with. They're the kind of people I would want to have working for me. Or working for that matter. And there are some individuals out there who have what I call the military complex. And this is like one out of every, I don't know, maybe 100 people who've served in the military. And I have had interactions with some of these kinds of people. They will kiss up and suck up to anybody who is superior to them. And they will berate and belittle and smash anybody that's below them, that they perceive to be below them. Without hesitation. By doing so, they feel like they are gaining something. I don't know what it is. We could get into that whole rabbit hole of everything that's going on mentally with them and psychologically and with all their issues. But they are the kind of people that I've noticed. I've observed things in life. They are the kind of people who have a really hard time struggling. They seem to do well initially because they can suck up to people, and some people like that. But they're not a true leader, and they never become a leader. In fact, I'll just tell the story. There was a guy I was in a flight club. I was learning how to fly. I'd got my instrument. I was working on my instrument license, and I was going to get my commercial license. But I was working on my instrument rating. I was probably 20. What was I? Well, no, I would have been. Yeah, I was probably 28 years old at the time. 27 maybe. And I was working on this. I'd got my private license when I was about 25, 24, right in that range. started working on my instant rating. Back then, in the 80s, it was a little harder. You had to have 120 some hours or whatever just to start working on your instant rating. Now you can start right away. You can start, as soon as you get your private license, you start working on your instrument rating. But you still have to have a certain amount of time flying, but it's changed. The minimums have changed. So I was working on this process, and there was another guy in our flight club, and he was just another member just like me. We had one airplane in the club. I think for a little while we had two, but that it was a very small club, about 15 of us in the club. And we went to this one meeting one time, and there was a couple of people who the one guy who was the president of the club was stepping down from being the president. He was moving away, and he didn't want to be the president of the club anymore. And so we were having elections, and it basically came down to who wants to be the nobody wanted to be the member. Nobody wanted to run for office. So it kind of came down to a couple of people who were willing to do it, and we just kind of had a decision that night. It was down between me and two other guys. I kind of stepped out because I was kind of busy at the time. And I was pretty young still. I felt like a young kid. Another guy was about 5 or 6, maybe 7, 8 years older than me. And he decided to do it. Now, he was also working for a local fixed base operator, which is like the place where they private planes pull in and they get gas, and they call them FBOs. He was pulling into this. He was working for that guy, and everybody there liked him. He was, he's just like, he's an average Joe, really good guy. Just he's out there, just will do anything. He's just good guy. So yeah, okay. And at that time, I didn't really hang out with the guy much. I thought he was an okay guy too, until he became president of the club. He was extremely overbearing with certain things. Now, he saw me as a threat, now, this which was a whole other issue too. He saw me as this problem because he was trying to gain flight hours. He was trying to change his career. He was trying to get into aviation as a career. Well, so was I. I wanted to be an instructor. And I wanted to get some kind of a job flying corporate airplanes or whatever I was going to do. At that time, I didn't think I was ever going to be able to be in the airlines because they required, 20/20 vision, and they required uncorrected, and they required college degree. You just didn't get in. I didn't have a college degree. I still don't. And they just didn't have any kind of, it was just very tough at that time to get into the airlines. So I was thinking I'd be a corporate guy. And even corporate flying was tough at that time. It was tough to get a job doing that. And so we were both kind of working we were both at about the same pace. Well, I was excelling through my training. I was getting through my instrument rating about twice as fast as he was. And my instructor was excellent. He went on to American Airlines back in the early 90s, probably maybe 89 or 90. And yeah, it must have been 91 when he went into the airlines. I've run into him a couple times since, but he's doing did an excellent job, and he got me just roaring through my training. And of course, we went up and flew in all kinds of weather. He didn't hesitate to go up. The other guy's instructor would not fly in actual instrument conditions. Well, I was willing to do it, and my instructor was willing to do it. And he said that some of the best training you can get is actually go up in actual weather and fly around in the actual conditions. And just because he had competence, he had enough competence and competence that he was able to do that, and he didn't hesitate to fly around in that kind of weather. So I went did our thing and got my instrument rating. In the process of doing all that, it was right when I was getting ready to get my check ride done, but within about a week or two, and he was still about halfway through his training. He was still working on it. He was really struggling. And part of that was because of his instructor. The other part of it was it was just him. I didn't realize that at the time. I thought the guy was pretty sharp, but I didn't realize how slow he really was, how much he was struggling with everything. Needless to say, there was one night where I took off with the airplane. I was just renting it to go to Chicago, and I went to Miggs Airport and was coming back by myself. And I ended up getting into some bad weather. This is before I got my instrument rating. Got in some bad weather, and I ended up having to land at a different airport that night, and I had to go to work. I was working two full-time jobs, and I ended up having to go to work at midnight someplace. So I got in about 10:30 up in Michigan, And then had a friend come up, pick me up, and drove me back home so I could get to work. I was about an hour late getting to work for my night job. And they ended up, but the problem was that the hangar, the plane was left there and stuff. And it was, so I let everybody know, hey, the plane is there. I can't get it back. I've got to work. I got stuck someplace. And so they had somebody move it for me. And of course they charged me for it. And that was fine. Now, in the process of all that, I get this phone call from the president of the company, the president of the club. And for about 10 minutes, he proceeds to chew me out and doesn't let me even say anything. He just continues to go on about how irresponsible I was and all this other, just on and on and on and on and on. And he used that story. I didn't know this until many years later, that he had used that story and went around to everybody at that particular airport and told them that I was irresponsible, that I was a problem child. I shouldn't be, they shouldn't use me for flying. And this is back when you'd go around and knock on doors and you'd ask for people to you wanted to do pilot service. So you wanted to do right seat flying in any kind of corporate jet you could to gain the time and experience and hopefully get a job at some point. And he went around to everybody's door, was telling everybody that I was a bad cookie, a bad egg, a bad piece of broccoli. I don't know what he told me, but he was bad mouthing me to everybody around the area. Well, then one day, this is after I had my commercial multi license, and I was just working on my CFI, my certified flight instructor license. I was working on that, and one of the guys who I had used as an instructor actually flew a jet for a company out of. Off this airport. I was at a different airport at that time. I had my own airplane, and he was training me to get my CFI, and he was flying with me and didn't see all the stuff that he had heard all about this, this, how terrible I was, but he was willing to, I was paying him. So he's willing to teach me, but he was an excellent instructor as well. And he apparently didn't see all the stuff that this other guy was telling him was how I was. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I get this call from someone on that field. It was another company altogether that had a Lear 31. And I guess they had called everybody they knew, and somebody had, some one of the guys that they called, or I guess a couple of people he called, had suggested my name. Of course, they passed me over, were reluctant. They couldn't find anybody else. I was like the bottom of the barrel, scratching the bottom of the barrel. To do this short flight over to Chicago, spend the evening there. The owner of this company wanted to go to Chicago, watch some kind of basketball game, the Bulls or whatever it was, and then come back that evening. Short flight, quick deal. So the chief pilot, I show up, chief pilot's there, we take off, get over there, land, come back. And they were kind of like, well, that went well. Next week I got another call. And then the next week, I get another call. And it finally got to the point where it was, they called me a couple times, I couldn't go, and then a couple more times I could. Flew with them several times. Well, then all of a sudden, everybody else on the field started calling me. I ended up in a little Citation jet. I ended up in a couple other airplanes, there was a King Air 300 that I started flying for quite a bit, actually. And the word got around on that field that, hey, this guy's not what we were told. And I had no idea until somebody finally, about a year later, I was doing quite a bit of flight service, but I was also, I got my instructor license in the meantime, and I was teaching people to fly, and I was actually really so busy with that, I almost couldn't ever make it to do flying for people. And I started doing single pilot charter for one of the companies off that airport. So I was actually flying two different airplanes for them. It was a 421, Cessna 421 and a Piper Aztec. And so I was doing that kind of thing. And they ended up, word got around. I was so busy doing that stuff that they were calling me and I wasn't able to do stuff very much. But in the process of all this, I end up working my way up the ladder with a couple companies. I ended up flying for a company called, I'm not going to say the name of the company. It was in a Citation 2 a Kinger F90 and a Conquest. That's all I'm going to say about that. The names have been changed for them. The Citation was a charter aircraft, so I was in the right seat of that aircraft as a second in command or FO, SIC they call it, on the charter certificate with that airplane. And I was working for them. I worked for them for probably about a year, I think. Very difficult guy to work for. The place was a revolving door. People would come in and go out. I was actually one of the longest employees he had ever had. Anyway, in the process of all that, I got taken aside at one point by one of the guys at the airport that was the other airport. And this guy said, you know, this other guy has been telling us all this time, all the stuff that you were doing. He said, the reason you weren't getting jobs over here, the reason nobody was calling you is because of that. What that guy was saying. So, well, I get it. I understand why the guy, he was competitive. He was threatened. I understand all that. It was disappointing to know that that's what happened. But at the same time, I wasn't. And to this day, I'm not angry with the guy for doing that. I'm just saying that because the guy had issues, and it was his problem, not mine. It became, I think, a problem for me. Now, I don't know, you know, all the persistence that I had to have to get past all that. I could have given up very easily. Nobody was using me. I could have just said, I'm not going to do this. I must not be good enough. I could have easily went down that road. I didn't. I just stayed persistent with it. I knew that it was aviation at that time for me was more than just, and I tried to explain this. I had one instructor who was really struggling with Christian stuff. And I would just tell him, you know, if I die today in an airplane, I know this is where God wants me. And I know that if something happens that's beyond my control or whatever happens, it's just, I know that I'm going to die doing his will. That's what's important for me. And I think that shook the guy up a little bit. This was one of my early on instructors. He didn't understand, you know, it's just kind of a fascinating way to look at things. And so I guess it was more of a calling for me, and it wasn't just something I wanted to do. It was, you know, this was a passionate thing. I was every time I got into an airplane, I felt like I was serving God. I was a part of his purpose and plan for my life. I've tried to live all my life that way. Some days better than others, obviously. But it's one of those things where sorry, I was on this. I was in the fun reason I was telling you about this company that I was flying charter with. I went down to Florida one day and happened to be the base of the place. This guy that had been the problem, and now, of course, I know all this now. Get down to Florida and we're the base airport where this whole company moved their entire base from this airport up north down to this place in Florida. And they had several airplanes, jets, turboprops, a couple of things. But it was still a corporate operation. And I'm on the field there, and I'm out on the ramp, and lo and behold, here comes this guy walking out on the ramp, going out to an airplane. I assumed by that point he had to have been flying. It was a little turboprop King Air C-90. I assumed he was going to be the captain in the airplane. I assumed he was. So I talked to him a little bit. Said, "Hey, how's it going? And I was just, what you been doing?" And so he said he was getting ready to go on a flight, and it was in this King Air. I said, "Oh, are you PIC in it? Are you flying anything else? You got your type rating and anything else, or is it just, you know, is it?" "Oh no, I'm still in the right seat. They're working on getting me in the left seat." This guy. Been working for him for 4 years and was still in the right seat of the airplane. And I was staggered by that. Not necessarily surprised, I guess, but just, I really felt sorry for the guy at that point. That kind of attitude, you know, It's not a leadership quality when you act like that. And this, I guess I'm officially become a crusty old man. I was just listening to a guy this morning. I was listening to a video this morning. And of course, I just watch a lot of YouTube, scour this. And I don't just watch like stupid YouTube stuff. I try to get educated on everything. I'm trying to learn things. This guy's got this kid on and he's talking about, I call him a kid. He might have been 30. I don't know. Definitely upper 20s. And he's going on and on about life and family and guys and faith and all this stuff. And he's talking about how, you know, I don't think he was a Christian believer. He was talking about some of the problems with Christianity and how, you know, men and women are different and just relationship stuff, going on and on about this. And he's been interviewed by an older guy. You know, the older guy didn't really question anything he was saying or say much about it, but he was going on about this whole thing. And this guy that he was, the channel guy was the owner of the channel, so to speak, I think is in his 50s. And he, you know, he claims to be this, you know, relational expert of some kind. He's going on. And this guy's just yakking. And as far as I'm concerned, he's just blowing smoke out of his mouth. And I actually put a comment on this video. And I probably could hear back from him. But I officially, I think, as I was typing it, I think I'm officially become an old, crusty old man. Because while I'm sitting there listening to this kid talk, I'm thinking, you know, I've lived twice as long as this guy. I've seen a whole lot more in my life. I probably saw more in my life and actually had real relationships because of, you know, the lack of electronic stuff going on in my younger days. This kid probably grew up with the internet, grew up with a cell phone in his hand. And I realized at that moment, this kid's no expert. He's touting a bunch of hollow stuff that he's observed that he thinks he knows. Give him another 30 years and see what he's going to say. And that's exactly pretty much what I typed in. I basically told him, this kid's got it all figured out. He's got life and faith and family and relationships all figured out. Thinks he knows everything about everything. Check back in 30 years and see what he's got to say. And it's these people who, you know, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. It's one of those issues where the people who really are really intelligent realize how little they really know. All right, maybe it's a mix of intelligence and wisdom. There's a difference between the two. And I think it's that part of that process that continues to humble us, not humiliate us, but to humble us in realizing that we should be slow to speak and quick to listen. And we can develop some opinions. There's nothing wrong to have opinions, nothing wrong with any of that, nothing wrong with being able to communicate and articulate those issues, those things, that those observations, those thoughts on life and faith and family. But I still hold on to those things. There are some things I hold on to very tightly, and some hills I will die on. But there are other things that I think I'm much more careful with. But there are definitely some truths that are absolutes. Speaking of one, let's get back to the politics of things. There was this recent interview. I just heard this morning. And I was going to record it because it was so good, but it was just a short. It was on Brandon Tatum actually played it. It's another guy's. He was making a commentary basically on someone else's channel or short or whatever he was doing. This guy was playing an interview, or this lady on MSNBC was talking, and she was some kind of special, she knows it all. So they're talking about all this stuff, and she's talking about how the Christian nationalists, they're not Christians, they're Christian nationalists. They believe that our rights, they don't come from Congress and the government, they come from God. And, well, yeah, as little thing called the Declaration of Independence. Our founders thought they came from God. They said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. They're endowed. Oh, you know the thing. They're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. What does that mean, lady? God-given rights that government recognizes. Not that God, that government doesn't give us rights. If government gives you rights, they can take them away. These are God-given rights that no man has the right to take away from you. That's the whole process, the whole premise of the individual's foundational truths of our founders. That's why our country is unique. That's why our independence, our Declaration of Independence, and our Constitution is unique, because it is all founded and based on those principles. And here she is saying that Christian nationalists, they're trying to make them out to be the brown coats, the Hitlerites. And people still to this day will say that Hitler was a Christian. Hitler was not a Christian. But they always say, Hitler was a Christian. No, he was not. You didn't hear him marching through any streets proclaiming the gospel. He was not a crusader. He was not doing what he did for in the name of Christianity. Period. Show me one speech that he ever made. It just didn't happen. But they lie about this kind of thing all the time. There's people just come up with this crap. And I don't know. It amazes me, I guess, in so many ways as to how they like to change history or rewrite history or write history in the, you know, history in the making, you know, in the midst of everything that they're doing. It just blows my mind. But I digress from that. Folks, we are approaching, coming up on Easter. It's not too far away. Now, Easter, we can talk about Easter a little bit. Passover, Pesach, is an interesting, very prophetic feast. And I might be talking about that more next week. I'm hoping possibly on Friday of next week, or at least one day next week, I'm going to be going through that whole thing. I'll try to let everybody know ahead of time so that you can either not listen if you don't want to listen. That's fine. But I'll talk about the whole thing of Pesach and how Messiah fulfilled every single thing in the Pesach, in the Passover feast. And just the amazing details that happened. It blows my mind. And this is just one little bitty scratch on the surface of everything that he did when he was here and what he fulfilled in the spring feast and everything else that happened. It's just amazing to me. It starts to deteriorate this idea of blind faith, because it's so obvious now. It becomes so obvious that there's just so much evidence, and now you have no excuse. If you can look at this and not, but it amazes me that and I've got some family that's in Judaism, that they're Jewish, and I'm amazed that they cannot see Messiah in the midst of everything that they do. And partially, well, I won't get into that. So next week at some point I'll be talking about that and what I've discovered in the process. Just sharing a lot of that with you, and hopefully that brings some insight to what's going on. And the whole thing of Easter and what that really means. Now, the name Easter, of course, there's a lot of controversy about that among some people. Can't celebrate Easter. You can't call it Easter. It's Resurrection Day. Well, okay. That's great. That's fine. Okay, we can move to try to change that culture a little bit, but I'm not going to start writing people off for calling it that. But it's just God's bigger than all that stuff. So anyway, having said all of that, we're working our way into the weekend here. By the way, Shabbat Shalom. Tomorrow and Sunday, of course, will be the weekend time. Hopefully all of you have that time off and you can spend time with your family or whatever you're doing this weekend. But in the meantime, I will be back at work and next week. Pretty long week, hopefully not doing too much, and I'll have time to do some shows. I don't know how things will work out for sure, but we're going to try to get that all put together for everybody. Once again, folks, thanks for listening. I really do appreciate it. I can't even express how much it means to me that there are people who listen to this podcast. It is amazing to me. Folks, thanks again for listening. Thank you for putting up with all my stories. And sorry there wasn't a whole lot of clips today that I had planned on. God bless, folks. Have a great weekend.